Hi, can you hear me? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me? Oh, good. Oh, there we
There you are.
go. Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. I have to do some stuff right here. I have two
Okay.
machines going,
Okay.
and they have to coordinate. I'm
Of
learning.
course. I'm
How you doing?
well, how are you?
Great. You've done such a good job with this, Dina.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad that we could put something together. I
You
feel,
did it
you
so
know.
quickly and so efficiently and
Thank
so
you.
nicely.
Thank you. So like I said in the email, we will get started at 7:30. I will cut all of this out. For anybody else who's on the call, just ignore us for now. I'll cut all of this out though from the final recording.
Or recording it.
We are going to record. It's already recording, but I will cut the recording and start it at 7:30.
Hello, everybody who's out there listening to us.
And you're planning to share some things?
Yeah, sure. I have a
Great.
whole
You know how to
slideshow.
share your screen?
I will.
Okay.
Right now, I'm making sure the camera is just right.
Okay.
It'll take because see, it's a little bit low. I have to make it higher. I'm using my iPad as the camera and my computer
Ah.
as the screen. That's better, don't you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what we'll plan to do and what we've done for the couple of webinars that we've done so far, if it works for you timing wise, we'll go for like 35 minutes with just you doing your presentation and going through your materials. And then
Sure,
for the
whatever you
last
want.
And then for like the last 10 minutes, we'll take questions. Anything that's come in through the course of the presentation, I'll read back to you as a question, and
Oh, you're going to do it at. Okay, so
or
people
you
aren't
can do it
after all.
yourself. There, one of the panelists had his screen shared the entire time, so he just couldn't see the questions. But if you want to take the questions as they come, it's up to you.
Let me see how it goes as we
Okay,
go.
sounds
I'm
good.
not seeing the screen share on my screen. Why is that? Any ideas?
If you move your mouse around, do you see on the bottom it says screen share?
I'm looking. I saw it before, when I used it yesterday, but I'm not seeing it in the same place today. I see chat, raise hand, and question and answer. I don't see screen
So you
share.
know what? I'm gonna see if I can promote. I see that you're logged in twice. I'm promoting you to a panelist down there too. Let me know if
There it is.
that works,
Got it.
please. Okay,
Because this is the one that has the screen.
got it. Okay, we're in good shape then.
See, not pretty.
Oh, perfect.
Now you can use my template if you want, by the way.
Thank you.
It's pretty nice.
Looks good.
Yeah, what's the, if we're going to do it, might as well, right?
Exactly.
All right, let me do full screen. Hold on. Window. No, come on, come on. Where are you? No, view, that's where I have to be. Full screen. Much prettier that way, right?
Beautiful. Looks good.
Okay. I want to tell me something. If I tell me if this works, because I haven't had anybody to know to talk to when I was did it, okay?
Okay.
I put on another screen, right? With the iPad. I'm trying to figure out how to do this.
Now I just lost you.
I'm just gonna try that again. Forget
Okay.
it. The question is, where did I lose you? I don't know. I don't know where you went. See, I'm not going to do that again. That's why I asked the question. I have learned my
This is
lesson.
why we meet a couple minutes early.
Oh, yeah, you're just on the Zoom button. That's easy.
There Perfect.
Okay, good. Sharing is paused. That's your choice.
I'm sorry.
Sharing is paused. That's intentional, right?
I don't know what you're looking at. I'm sorry.
On my screen, it says sharing is paused. Bring
Oh,
your shared
sharing.
screen. Yeah. Do you see my screen?
I do see your screen.
Oh, then I don't care, right? It's the one
Yep.
with the, it's a full screen, right?
It's not actually.
Oh, you're seeing the iPad screen?
I'm seeing, it looks like I'm looking at a PDF.
The one that, but do you have other stuff on the screen as well, or just the PDF?
Just the PDF.
Is it full screen?
It looks like what you would look like on a it looks like a PDF. Like I can see like the.
So it's
the,
not a full screen PDF.
No.
So you're looking at the iPad screen. Why aren't you looking at the other one? I don't want this shared. Share. You cannot start sharing while the other participant is sharing. Okay, fine. It should be coming through. Did you just see the slide change?
No.
No.
Nope.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do.
That's oh, wait, hold on, hold on. I'm going to try something. Try now.
Ready? All right, right. Here it goes. Resume share. Resume share. I'm going to stop share. Right? And then I'm going to share it again.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Ah, there we go. Full screen.
Good.
Great.
It's much nicer this way.
Looks great. Looks really nice.
Okay.
So I'm just going to mute myself for the next couple of minutes. And then if you need anything, just holler. But we'll get started around 7:30.
I'm here.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. No. No, not now. Hold on. No, I don't see it. Only Dina sees it.
All right, Dr. Fine, I'm sure that people are going to keep joining onto the call. It's just 7:30 now, but if you'd like to get started or anytime you want to get started, it's all yours.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to my office. I never thought we'd meet like this. I want to especially welcome all of my students far and wide over the years. And welcome back to YU, at least as it as broadcast from my home office. What we're going to deal with tonight is From Darkness to Great Light, Pesach in the Talmudic Village. In other words, Me'afelah Le'or Gadol, which is, of course, a citation from the Mishnah and Psachim, which gives this amazing list of language for praising God, which is so long and so intense, and it's a great example of using as many words as we possibly can because we don't have enough words to say what we want to say. But one phrase in particular strikes me, Me'afelah Le'or Gadol, from darkness to a great light. Especially when we think about the world of the Talmudic village. These are all Jewish villages across the northern part of the land of Israel, from the west at Josepha to the east in the Golan. Communities, real people who lived in the age of Chazal, in the age of Rabbi Yochanan, in the age of Hillel before, of the age of the Tanaim and the Amoraim and Rabban Gamliel in the south and Rabbi Yochanan in the north. This is the world we're looking at. This is where they functioned. This is the place where they lived. And this is the kind of place where they lived. This is the Talmudic village in Katzrin, where I hope you've had a chance to visit, in the Golan Heights. I happily was part of the team that interpreted this site after Ann Killebrew excavated a Byzantine period site, and we turned it into the Talmudic village. Now, for me, the Talmudic village serves as a kind of home page, a base camp for talking about all sorts of issues in the real life of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael and of the literature that they created and the lives that are expressed in that literature. And so if you can imagine walking down this path with Rachel Eshet Rabbi Akiva, or in this house, there used to be a roof, of course, with any of the other Tanaim or Amoraim.
I don't see any.
Is the visual working? I've heard that it isn't. Anybody out there?
Your screen is not shared right now from what I see.
You're not seeing what? You're not seeing the images?
Nope.
Okay, let me make it happen. Okay. Give me a second. It's always the share screen. Boom. Wait, hold on. Boom. Share screen. Boom. That will do it. Everyone see it? That makes it much easier, right? Okay. So we're looking at the world of the rabbis. Mafela Leor Gadol. Let's think for a moment about what we're looking at. Here it comes. We are in Katzrin, near the very northern edge of Jewish settlement in the Golan Heights. Deborah is really only a mile and a half away. This map is distorted. And then we're going to jump to Migdal and Arbel through our time together. This is the Talmudic village in Katzrin. The village is from the 5th century or so. And so we're going to have to imagine slightly earlier and slightly later people in these places and times, but we are literally entering into their kitchens and their living rooms.
Dr. Fine, I'm sorry. We're still stuck on that first page that we were stuck on before.
Really? Oh my God, really? Try it again. Ready? I love technology when it works. Is it working?
There you go.
Everyone got it? Fantastic. Okay, now we're in the living room of the Talmudic house. Now, on the left is a bench, a table, an eating area, the ladder to go upstairs, the broom, but it wasn't this horrific looking if you lived in it 1500 years ago. The walls would have been covered with white plaster. The floors would have been plastered. It would be a more bright environment, but this is the kind of space where medium income village dwelling Jews would live their lives, where they'd celebrate their seder, where they would sleep, where their animals would come, just like everybody else in that world. The kitchen, where the food would be created, where the grinding wheels would be used to make flour. The Beit Knesset at Katzrin, where they would come together as a community to do all the things that one does in Shul. But this was an amazing accomplishment because what we're looking at is Jewish normalcy, Jewish normality, the Beit Knesset, the home, the farming experience, life after the destruction of the temple. But in 70, everything changed. In the year 70, things were not normal anymore. Pesach couldn't be celebrated as Pesach, and Shavuot couldn't be celebrated with the Bikurim, and Sukkot couldn't be celebrated in the Chatzrot Chodshecha and the Beit HaMikdash. None of this worked. And can you imagine people in a village like the one that we just looked at thinking about this moment? What are they going to do? The temple is destroyed in Av, We're coming on the fall holidays. We're coming on Pesach. What do we do? We can't go to Yerushalayim. Many of the things we thought about seem trivial with the temple gone. What do we do? Well, we're going to start out at a place called Migdal, which is a village excavated just in the last few years on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's Migdal is called Magdala in Greek. It's the in Aramaic and in Greek. It's a fishing village. It was a site of a great battle in the Jewish War of 66 to 73. And at the beginning of that war, there was a sea battle here. The problem, of course, is that the Jews lost and the town was decimated. And this village and its Beit Knesset fell into ruin. Now, the Beit Knesset had a funny stone in the center of it. And if you ask scholars what it is, they'll give you all sorts of answers. And I don't know what it is. But the stone stood at the very center of the Beit Knesset. And inscribed on the stone is the image of an object that the people who lived in Migdal might have seen when they went to Yerushalayim on the Chagim, the seven-branch menorah. And so these are people who actually saw the menorah, who had the menorah in their Beit Knesset. What are they to do when the temple doesn't exist? How are they to maintain their Avodat Hashem? How are they to maintain their religious experience with the temple in ruins? Well, we have examples. This happened before. You're looking at Mount Gerizim above Nablus. Mount Gerizim is the holy mountain of the Samaritans, the place where they believe Akedat Yitzchak took place, the place where they believe the tabernacle was situated. The Beit HaMikdash of the Shomronim, though in their tradition, it's referred to as a place of sacrifice rather than a temple. Well, between 114 and 110 BCE, John Hyrcanus, the Sasmonian king, came north from Judea and destroyed this temple. Now, Judeans celebrated and created a holiday that they called Yom Har Gerizim, which was preserved in a book called Megillat Ta'anit, an early source preserved by the rabbis. But for Samaritans, it was completely devastating. How did they respond to the destruction of their holy place? 100 and many years before the Jewish temple was destroyed for the Jews. They didn't stop sacrificing. They kept going on pilgrimage to Mount Gerizim for each of the three festivals. This is a priest, the Chazan, holding up the Torah scroll for all to see. Around the turn of the century, you see them on Mount Gerizim, sheep on the left, preparing for the Passover sacrifice. These people have continued to sacrifice on their holy mountain since the destruction, apparently, of their sacrificial center more than 100 years before the destruction, before the turn of the Christian era. This was a choice. They continued sacrificing. They could have come to a different solution, but no, the Pesach is the Pesach, and every year they go to the top of the mountain and sacrifice it, as is described in the Torah. Jews could have made that decision. And in fact, after the destruction of the temple, there were Jews who lived among the ruins of the holy city, the Kehilat Kedishah Sheb'Yerushalayim. And this holy community in Jerusalem lived among the ruins. And I wouldn't be surprised if they snuck up on the Temple Mount and did sacrifice. No one knows what they did or what they didn't do. It wasn't obvious what should happen. After all, the Samaritans chose to continue their sacrificial service. Would the Jews do the same? Truthfully, it was impossible for Jews to do the same. If for no other reason than that Hadrian built his own temple on top of this mountain in the city of Aelia Capitolina, the new name of Jerusalem, somewhere in the around 130 of the Common Era. So even if Jews wanted to go up here and sacrifice, they only had a small window to do it. There was a 70-year window to discuss, to think, to figure this out, to decide what Pesach would look like after the Afelah, after the darkness fell. The Mishnah describes, attempts to figure this out in amazing detail, step by step, how the Tanaim, the Chachamim after the Chorban, thought about this. And so, for example, in Masechet Eduyot in the Mishnah, which is a very strange text because it is literally a list of statements by rabbis chronologically by generation. It's not like the rest of the Mishnah. It's a uniquely structured document. And in Masechet Eduyot, Rabban Gamliel, meaning Rabban Gamliel of Yavne after the Chorban, had three things that he was mekel on, that he was willing to be lenient. One of them was the osing gedi mikulath lelele hapsachim, and he allowed people to make gedi mikulas. Now, kalos in Greek means beautiful, and so even in describing the new question of what you do after the destruction of the temple, he doesn't say take a gedi muvchar. He doesn't take a gedi mihudar. He takes the Greek loan word, agdi mikulas, a beautiful little sheepy, belele hapsachim. He would allow people to sacrifice or to kill or to eat on their table a beautiful little sheep on Erev Pesach. In other words, in effect, continue something that looked like the Pesach sacrifice. But the Chachamim forbade it. But his peers wouldn't hear of it. The question of what to do after the Chorban, how do you celebrate Pesach, is central to this question. The Mishnah in Pesachim describes it as follows. Shevachol ha-leilod anu ochlin basar tzali shaluk mevushal ha-layla hazeh kulo tzali. On all other nights, we can eat all sorts of cooked meat. But tonight, we only eat broiled meat. Why broiled meat? Because it's reminiscent of the Passover sacrifice. On all other nights, we eat any kind of meat we want. Tonight, we eat a meat that reminds us of the Korban. That's very close to having the Korban in your home. This is not only a distinction, this is transferring the Korban into the Jewish home, even without going up to Yerushalayim to sacrifice it. This is revolutionary. All the way over in Rome, you're looking at central Rome. This is the Colosseum built by Domitian, completed by Domitian, the largest theater in the world, built with funds, as my lost and esteemed colleague Louis Feldman showed, taken from the temple in Jerusalem. Over here is the Arch of Titus. Over here is the Temple of Peace, where the menorah was stored. In the second century, lots of rabbis found their way to Rome. They went there to see, for example, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Kishaiti bar Rama Shamaiti at the menorah. When I went to Rome, there I saw the menorah, and he would have seen it in this temple. Jews lived over here on the other side. If you're familiar with Rome today, the Jewish ghetto is right here, and the Jewish community lived over on the other side of the river. There's a fellow that's described as meeting Rabbi Yosa. Rabbi Yosa is Rabbi Yossi, who is a student of Rabbi Akiva, so we're set around 150 or so when rabbis are going back and forth to Rome, and this is what he says. Todos ish Romi, a guy named Todos. So still a very common name among Sfaradim of the Balkans. It's a Greek name. It's sort of like Theodore or Stephen, one of those Greek names that works because it doesn't have any pantheistic associations. So Todos, the man of Rome. Now, is he in Rome or is he in Eretz Israel? I don't know. But this is what he did. He would instruct the people of Rome to take, meaning to purchase, a sheepies on the night of Pesach. By the way, likach is a chazal structure verb form. It's lakachat in modern Hebrew. Likach is lif'al. So that shouldn't confuse people when you see it. But osino tom mekulasin, and you make it beautiful. Amrulo, af hu karov la'achil kodashim bechutz mifnei shekorino topsachim. Oh my God, he is coming awfully close to eating sacrificial meat outside of the temple. How is that? Not because he's eating this animal, because as we saw, eating the animal is a debate among rabbis, at least in the generation of Yavne. And our four questions, if you will, as they appear in the Mishnah, also has eating meat that evening. But eating just this kind of sheepy and saying that it's a Pesach sacrifice, that's too far. He's going too close. He's hitting a line, this Todros fellow. He's hitting a line. He's coming very close to telling people that they are actually eating the Pesach sacrifice after the Chorban. Not so different than what our Samaritan friends are doing.
Okay, I found this on the web. Fahawine is coming very close to telling people that.
Let's keep going with this. So we saw that Rabban Gamliel allowed these kinds of animals. You saw that the Chachamim, whenever they lived, didn't. You saw that Rabbi Yossi didn't. And you see that the Mishnah actually suggests eating meat as a normal thing. This is an issue of nuance, deep nuance. Is it a Pesach sacrifice or is it a sheep? Right? Okay. Now let's go on to the Mishnah again. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer. This is famous. Rabban Gamliel the Yavne used to say, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu v'fesach, lo yatzal lidei chovato. Anybody who didn't say these three things on Pesach has not made it happen. We all know this one. Pesach, matzah, umaror. But take a look what the Mishnah does that your Haggadah down below doesn't do. Pesach, al shum shapasach hamakom al batei avoteinu b'mitzrayim. Nikudah. Pesach, because God passed over our ancestors' house, not because we are doing the sacrifice. It's intentionally eliding the sacrificial element at some level. It goes back to Mitzrayim. It doesn't go to the Beit HaMikdash. It's keeping the Mitzrayim focus. Now, notice that our Haggadah, which is a medieval text, cleans it up a little bit. Pesach Shahai, you avotenu ochlim bezman Beit HaMikdash. Don't think that we're eating it today. Stay away from the thought that your animal is, in fact, a korban. Now, how does Chazal solve this problem? As far as the Second Temple period, Jews were gathering together and singing psalms and eating together and saying motzi and having the animal. All Chazal did was create the environment to continue having the meal without the animal. Shebechol ha'leilot anu ochlin ben yoshvinu ben mesubin. Halayla hazeh kulanu mesubin. This is the version in your Pesach Haggadah that replaces the meat question, because eating meat on Pesach wasn't common in many communities. It again is, of course, if you're a Yemenite or many of the other non-Ashkenazi communities, eating lamb on Pesach is a delicacy. But in Ashkenaz to this day, this is a serious thing to stay away from, eating lamb on Erev Pesach, lest you be eating a Korban Pesach. Shebechol ha'leilot anu ochlin ben yoshvinu ven mesubin. The meal becomes central. Notice you see here somebody laying down and eating, and other people sitting down and eating, and this person bringing the wine. on a tomb, on a sarcophagus, on a funerary monument from which is now at the Getty Museum, from the second century of the Common Era in Rome. And so reclining, having conversation, and more than that, raising the matzah almost to the level of the Pesach, when before the matzah and the maror may or may not have been independent, but they certainly were overshadowed by the Pesach. Now they are absolutely equal, set out as a threesome. And so Chazal, in trying to construct Pesach, provided us with tools to survive, to maintain our integrity, to go down one path when we well could have chosen another. Let's keep going with this. And so, from darkness to great light. An evening, lehodot, lehalel, leshaber, lefael, leromem, leadel, lebarer, leale, lekales, lemisha asalavotenu lelanu et kol anisim ha'il. This sense of absolute overflowing words instead of sacrificial experience. Let's try another village. This is a place called Arbel. Now, Arbel is located, if you've ever driven from Tiberias toward Kibbutz Lavi, as soon as you leave Tiberias, off to the right, there's a road, and that road will tell you, take you to a place called Karnei Chitim. That, by the way, is where Saladin defeated the Crusaders. If you keep going, you come to Kfar Arbel. And if you go to Kfar Arbel, you will find in this beautiful valley, Bikat Arbel, this synagogue, from the 4th century or so, 4th or 5th century, a Jewish village from the time of the Chachamim. Now, about 100 years before this building was built, here's a map in case you missed it, about 100 years before this building was built here in Arbel with its wonderful view out to the sea, there was a story that happened. That's what the word Dilma here means. Dilma in the Yerushalmi does not mean perhaps. In fact, it's a scribal error that found its way into print. The word is actually drama. It's a resh and not a lamed. But when the one manuscript of the Yerushalmi was transcribed into a printed edition, somehow this happened. Dilma, there's a drama that occurred, the Greek word, a maaseh. Rabbi Chiya Rabba and Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta havu mehalchin bahada bikat Arbel. They were walking in the valley of Arbel, just what we just saw. They were walking through here, without all the houses, of course. And you can see the view that they can see in this valley, out toward the Sea of Galilee and the Golan. Okay? So here they are in Bikat Arbel. And they were there when the sun was beginning to come up. And Ra'u Ayelet HaShachar Shebaka Ora. And they saw the first light, this wonderful metaphor, the deer of the dawn, right? The first light when it began to break through over the heavens. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Shimon ben Chalafta. Amar Rabbi Chiya Rabba, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta. And this is what Rabbi A said to Rabbi B. And of course, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta is a student of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So we're just around 200. Kachi Geulatan shel Yisrael. What you're seeing with the sun coming up, this is how the redemption of Israel will take place. Me'afela le'ora. B'tchila kima kima. At first, it'll come slowly and slowly. kol ma shehi holechet, hi rabba v'holechet. But the more it rises, the greater and greater the redemption will be. My tama ki eshev v'choshech, Hashem ma'or li. Even as I sit in darkness, Hashem is a light to me. As I sit in darkness, it is going to get brighter, is the drasha on this verse in Micha. Now, this is what it's talking about. The sun broke out over the lake, over Bikat Arbel, over the Golan. Now, what have we tried to do in the last little while? Let's go back. Amar Rabbi Chiya, we are dealing with redemption. We are going from darkness to light, from one Talmudic house to another. But you know, it didn't have to turn out this way. It could have been very, very different. Now, that very, very different is hugely interesting. And in fact, it is the basis of a Yeshiva University project that I head, the YU Israelite Samaritans Project. Now, if I'm very fortunate, I am going to figure out how to show you something about this project. Now, if I get it right, I did it. If I don't get it right, I didn't. Now, let's try this. Now, here we have trailer. Yeshiva University has produced and is in the process of producing our own documentary with the Keren HaChadasha LeKol Noah in Israel. The Keren HaChadasha LeKol Noah and we came together with a filmmaker, Moshe Alafi, to create a documentary called Lahatzilat HaEdah, or in English, The Samaritans, Saving a Biblical People, which is part of a larger project called the YU Israelite Samaritans Project, which will culminate an exhibition at YU Museum next January. Let me show you what could have happened 2,000 years after the destruction of our temple. Had Chazal not made the decisions that they made, we could have had a very different future. We're looking at the Korban Pesach. Now, I turned off the sounds quite intentionally. We are watching what Pesach looks like on Mount Gerizim. Song, festivity, children running about, and of course, at the end, our guys. Now, what we've seen today together is what Pesach is and what it isn't, how it became something different than we would have ever have anticipated, how it became the festival that Shoalina love Shelotar Bay, that we ask questions and questions and questions without the past Pesach sacrifice. In fact, after the Six-Day War, a group of Jews asked and went to sacrifice on Har Habayit. And the chief rabbi, Rav Unterman, forbade sacrifice on Har Habayit. He wouldn't allow Jews to go there and offer the Pesach sacrifice. Instead, Rav Unterman said, this is what Samaritans do, he inferred. This is what Samaritans do. This is not what we do. With the implication, Jews, go and learn. Jews, go and study. Jews, wait for the Beit HaMikdash, and when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, all things will be different. In the meantime, there's one more message, though, that I'd like to share with you. And that's all the way back here. Redemption comes slowly. Redemption comes kima kima, like the sun coming up in the morning every day over the Golan, seen from the valley of Arbel. Chachamim used the metaphors of their world to talk about the deepest of theological issues. But for us today, let's look at the verse in Micha. Ki eshev v'choshech, Hashem or li. Even as I sit in darkness, Hashem is my light and becomes my light increasingly. Kima Kima. For those of us who are living in our homes, who aren't going outside, who are not having our big seders this year, who aren't doing what we love best in the month of Nisan, for those who are alone in their homes, and for those who are in their families, but not with their extended families, where grandparents are far away from children and children are away from grandparents. The message of this Agadata, the message of Pesach, Ki Eshev B'choshech, Hashem Orli, redemption and our health in Yirtzeh Hashem will come. Kima, Kima. Let's all stay strong together. Thanks. Dina?
Thank you very much, Dr. Fine. Are there any questions that we might be able to take at the end of the presentation?
Anybody, please.
You can either type them in, or if you raise your hand, I can call on you.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My question is the menorah that was shown on that stone in that shul, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Having said before that it's unlikely it was actually really a curved menorah?
I'm sorry? That's a curved menorah.
Right, no, but hadn't you taken the position in recent years that in all likelihood the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash was spikes rather than...
No, not at all. I said exactly the opposite.
Okay.
In fact, Josephus and Philo described the menorah as reflecting the celestial path of the planets through the heavens. And that's, I think, the root of our round branches. In other words, the menorah as a reflection of the cosmic spheres.
Okay, my mistake.
Nah. In fact, if you find one that's straight, it's either A, the Rambam, who said straight out, I don't draw very well, or somebody else in antiquity who did not draw very well, because it was very close to being a halacha and Moshe Mitzinai, that they're round, and no one ever discussed it until the Rambam drew it badly. His son said that he really meant it, and then that found its way through the Yemenite tradition and on, of course, to Lubavitch. Anything else? Do you know anything?
Elisheva there?
Hi, Elisheva, I don't think your mic is on.
Hi, do you hear me now?
I do.
Hi. Welcome. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Stephen, can you just tell us what is the Gemara source with this Kima Kima? I just didn't have...
I'll show you. It's Yerushalmi first parak. Of Brachot. See?
Yerushalmi
Brachot Perek Aleph.
Okay. Thank you. Very, very beautiful.
Isn't it a wonderful story? It goes on and discusses it in terms of Esther and Mordechai, and it ends up with Layudim Haita Ora, right? But at the process leading to the Ora and Esther, but that wasn't for my drasha today, so I left that part out.
Okay, that makes sense, because Ayelet HaShachar is another name for Esther in the Midrash.
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you, Steve.
But you know what? Ayelet HaShachar has become real spoken Hebrew. There's a kibbutz by that name as well. It's one of those wonderful Hebrew things. Stay safe.
We have a question here from Baruch Lev Kelman. Why is it that the Samaritans preserve the Paschal sacrifice as opposed to other sacrifices?
That is my student, Baruch Lev Kelman, who is in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and is a Charney fellow, or excuse me, Charney research assistant at the Center for Israel Studies. They keep the Pesach sacrifice because the Pesach sacrifice has karet if you don't do it. I think that's a lot of it. In other words, the Paschal sacrifice isn't necessary to Louis Bamakom. We read it as Tolui Bamakom, but it doesn't necessarily. I think they read it in a similar way. That's the short answer, okay? The rest of it we'll do in class as soon as we get back together. What else?
Are there any other questions? We have a couple more minutes of time here. If there are any other questions, you can raise your hand on the toolbar at the bottom, or you can type your question into the chat.
So while we're waiting, let me point out that there are a number of wonderful books that are maybe helpful to people in thinking about our project. One of them is Haggadot Chazal, which I guess you can see, right? Haggadot Chazal is published by Zev Safrai and his father Shmuel Safrai, two great scholars. And it literally goes through Chachamim manuscripts. It's a wonderful introduction to the world of the Haggadah and its history. It's also available in English, though frankly, I've never read the English, I can't tell you. But it is available in English and it's in local bookstores and I highly recommend it. The study of Pesach never ends, of course. There's a wonderful book called Otsar HaHaggadah by Yud Nun Epstein, published in the 20s, which has all the classic Mefarshim in it. And is well worth owning to this day. So for those who are continuing their Pesach study, there's lots to do, there's lots to read, and there's much to know about the world of the Chachamim and the amazing transformations that they had the gumption to create at a moment when we really needed it. Okay.
We have here, actually. We have one more from Jason Hall. Did the Samaritans celebrate Passover like this before the destruction of the temple or just after?
They always did the Pesach sacrifice, as far as we know. They've always done it. This is what they do. So interesting. This year is going to be the first year in a long time where they're not going to be accepting guests on Mount Gerizim. They've closed the synagogues at the order of the high priest. You know, they have a high priest. When I first went to Mount Gerizim, I was introduced to the high priest, and I'd never met a high priest before except in the Mishnah. And so I looked at him and I said, "What do I say to you?" So I said what the Mishnah would say, "Ishi Kohen Gadol," Mr. High Priest. Now, the truth is that the high priest today is no longer a descendant of Eleazar. He's a member of Kahat, a descendant of Kahat, according to Samaritan tradition. They keep very careful records, but in the 17th century, the last of the Eleazar priests died out, and so they chose another Levitical family to carry on the line. The high priest has ultimate authority within the community over all of the legal issues. Happily, their Pesach is not the same time as our Pesach, so anybody can go up there and watch if you'd like. Is that it?
I think that's all the questions for now, but if it's okay, we'll send an email out to everybody with your email address, so if they have any questions directly for you, we can get them in touch.
Absolutely. stephen.fine@yu.edu. Thank you all, and please stay safe.
Thank you.